Let's see if I'm on. Yay! Oh, so many beautiful faces out there. So many faces that I don't recognize, which means that this body is just growing by leaps and bounds, which just absolutely blesses me just to see what the Lord's doing here in Mesquite. Thank you, Rick. I'm so excited to share with you guys what the Lord has been showing me this last year and doing in me in my personal life. Those who expected to hear a Bible teaching this morning, you're going to be disappointed because I'm a little long-winded. But I hope you're blessed nevertheless. So for those who don't know me and for those who think they might know me, I'm going to tell you a little bit about myself because I'm increasingly surprised when I share some nugget about my life and they go, oh, I didn't know that. And you know, I've been involved in this church goodness, a number of years, probably 7 or 8 years now. I'm your missionary. I'm the extension of this church into Africa most recently, but before that, other countries in Asia. So I'm going to be a little systematic in telling you about what's going on and who I am for those especially who don't know me. Stephanie Williams, my given name. I was born in southern Utah in Leverkin, so for any of you guys who know this area, it's not too far from here. I have a ton of family in this area. I mean, a ton of family in this area, and most of them are Mormon or Jack Mormon or New Agey or, you know, this sort of thing, or agnostic, which was what I was raised. My family had come out of the fundamental Mormon group, one of those, you know, Colorado Springs kind of whatever, and so they broke away from the pardon me, sorry, they broke away from the church when I was very young, and they didn't raise me to believe in anything. In fact, I didn't know who Jesus was until the age of 17. I honestly thought he was a swear word. That's how ignorant I was. I didn't know the Bible. I didn't know anything spiritual. I was an absolute blank page. And I remember being really, really disappointed in life. I'd wake up in the morning thinking, you got to be kidding me. This is it. I'm breathing. I'm eating. I'm sleeping. But you got this is it. And through my first job and through friends at school, people started praying for me, telling me about Jesus. Very systematically, I can look back and I can see the fingerprints of God all the way back. And I gave my life to the Lord at 18. Now, I was so ignorant as to the Bible. I remember sitting in Bible study and I opened my Bible, which is brand new, like golden-leaved, you know, edging kind of thing. And I see half of it's in red. And I turn to my friend next to me and I go, why are some of the words in red? The other one's in black. I don't get it. She thought I was joking. She thought, you know, you seriously don't know? And I go, no, I don't. Oh, those are Jesus' words. Oh, okay. You know, I remember just having to learn all of these things. What was transubstantiation and, you know, eschatology, all this, you know, Christianese that we like to speak. I just remember being a blank slate. But I also remember early on, the Lord made it super abundantly clear that I was to be involved in missions. And immediately got plugged in to short-term missions work, mostly down in Mexico. And then from there, it just increased. My first church that sent me out as a missionary when I was about 23, 24, was actually in Vegas, a Calvary Chapel there. And they sent me to France because I have language skills and I speak French. And I went and worked with prostitutes, doing street evangelism, and then university students, and grew a lot during that time. And when I came back, I knew I needed to have more than just a Bible college education. I needed to know, I wanted a practical skill to serve people within the foreign mission field. And God, through a series of beautiful events, spoke to me and told me that I was going to be a midwife. I thought he was nuts, because anyone who knows me, I'm not the most maternal kind. You know, some women dream of growing up and loving on babies, and, you know, they play dollhouse and all that kind of thing, and that was definitely not me. I cut off all the hair on my dolls, and I dismembered them, and, you know, I was tomboy. And so the fact that he wanted me to be a midwife was actually outrageous in my mind. I remember my sister-in-laws would talk about this and that and pregnancy and whatnot, and I just like, oh, gross. You know, it just sounds like so gross. I don't want to talk about fluids. I don't want to talk about placentas. I don't want to know, you know, that kind of thing. Keep me innocent. And lo and behold, he said, you're going to be a midwife, and I'm going to send you to Africa. And I went, okay. And he goes, even more, he told me which school I was going to go to, which is a missions-minded school that trains up midwives to go into places where nobody else is necessarily going, and do friendship evangelism. And it happens to be in the Philippines. And so for those who date back to that era, in 2007, this church sent me out to the Philippines to study and work at a charity birthing clinic in Mindanao, the island of Mindanao in the southern Philippines. And I spent 2 years. It's a super intense program. And it took me, they put a 5-year program of basically a master's in midwifery, and they crunched it down into 2 years. And, you know, 80-hour weeks. I remember sleeping, eating, and then catching babies. And it was an extraordinary time. God taught me some amazing lessons, and I absolutely fell in love with the Filipino people, fell in love with the work. And I remember very first birth that I had to observe, because they don't let you just, you know, they don't hand you gloves and let you catch babies. You have to actually learn the stuff before you do it. But I remember the very first birth that I was observing, I remember asking the Lord, please, Lord, please, 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 this is completely out of obedience to you. You know I'm not maternal. You know that this is the last thing I want to do. I'm doing this out of obedience to what I believe you've called me to do. Please, I'd really like to at least like it. You know, if I'm going to do this for the rest of my life, I'd really like to just like it. I don't have to love it. Just, you know, like it. And I kid you not, that birth was the most miraculous birth I'd ever seen. I fell in love with it. I look back on the notes now, because I have notes of all of the births that I've attended, and it was a train wreck. The whole birth was a train wreck, but what I saw, the birth that I saw, was absolutely glorious and beautiful. So, a little long story short, I finished my time in the Philippines, and I came back, and God told me I'd be spending a couple of months in Haiti, and I did. I went in 2009, after my graduation, and after I passed my board exams as a midwife. I went, again with this church, to Haiti, and I spent 3 months there. And the Lord had told me that I was only going to be there 3 months, but that he had lessons to teach me, and boy, did he teach me some lessons there. I knew probably after the first or second week that Haiti was not the country for me, but still, I needed to learn the lessons, and those lessons carry over for exactly what I'm going to do next. But he sent me to Haiti to kickstart a birthing clinic. Why he sent me, I thought was really ridiculous, but he did. And I got to see what it takes to kickstart a birthing clinic. And then I came home, and then the earthquake happened, for those that know. It was in 2010. And all my friends, I watched them go through those, you know, the aftermath of that particular earthquake. And my heart is still broken for Haiti, but I know I'm not supposed to go there. After Haiti, I came home, and everyone asked me, where are you going? So where are you going next? And a little bit like this now. And I said, I don't know. The Lord told me he'd tell me in March. I went, okay, fantastic. March, I waited, and I waited, and I prayed, and I prayed, and I waited, and I waited. And sure enough, March 1st, he told me where I was going. And by March 15th, it was confirmed. And by the beginning of June, I was in South Sudan. And I had dreamed of going to South Sudan or someplace like that for many, many years. I knew exactly that's what I was going to do, like little mud hut, you know, deliver babies in the bush, share Christ. That was all just my dream. And I fell in love with the work. It took me a while to fall in love. Don't get me wrong. It wasn't, you know, comfortable a lot of the time. And nobody likes scorpions and bats and snakes and malaria. Who likes that, right? But I absolutely fell in love with South Sudan, and I wanted to stay. But the lessons that the Lord took me there for were learned, and he taught them powerfully over and over again, lessons of faithfulness, and again, understanding what it takes to start a birthing clinic. And without even trying, I started a birthing clinic. I was actually instructed not to start a birthing clinic, but I didn't know how not to. You know, it's like you can start caring for these women, and then they start coming more and more and more and more, and then finally you're delivering 30 to 40 babies a month. And it was a very busy time for me, a very stressful time. I had to learn how to deal with death, which is very whitewashed here in the States, very, very hidden, very polished over. And being confronted with that, the infant mortality rate, being half the babies die before the age of 5 in South Sudan, and the maternal mortality rate, where 1 in 7 or 1 in 8 women will die over a lifetime during childbirth. And having to deal with those kind of realities really shook me to my core. And of course, it didn't necessarily shake my faith, but it had to teach me lessons, grieving and things of that nature. I came home from Sudan worn out, some would say even burned out, with what I like to call reverse culture shock on steroids, which I later learned last summer was not too uncommon or not too dissimilar to PTSD. And to say that you always have to have it right on or you always have to have it figured out as a missionary or as a Christian is inaccurate. We all struggle, we all go through difficult times, and last summer was that for me. So some of you saw me, and probably when you first saw me when I got home, I'm all excited, I'm telling you about South Sudan. I'm really hoping to go back. I love South Sudan. My heart is broken that he's not sending me back. But at the same time, I know that's not where he has me next. And of course, it's taken me a couple of months to come to terms with that. I don't always like to say, yes, Lord. Sometimes I say, no, Lord, I got it better figured out. Come on, let me do it. He, of course, always rules and reigns, and he knows what's best for us. So over the summer, the Lord healed me. It took a process of time and just counseling in his word and with his people, and he restored me. But it became a summer of silence. I remember pleading with him, Lord, please tell me what you're going to do next. I need to know now, because I'm a planner. I don't know if there are any other planners out there in this world, in this crowd, but if you're a planner, like me in my flesh, I really want to know what's next. I really want to have the answers. Because everyone kept asking me, you know, wide-eyed and big smiles, what are you going to do next, Steph? And I'm like, I don't know. I have no clue. The Lord won't talk to me. And it was the first time in my Christian walk that the Lord was silent. And it was not necessarily a season of pain or darkness in the sense of depression, but a season of silence and darkness. I had no idea which direction I was going to go. I knew he wasn't calling me out of the mission field, but I also didn't know where he was sending me next. And all of a sudden, the minute you don't know, everyone starts telling you what you should do. Oh, you should go to this country over there, and you should go to that country over there, and I have a friend who da-da-da-da-da. So I wrote them all down, and I started praying over them. I had 11 different options, different offers, people inviting me to come and work in different places as a midwife, and all of them sounded wonderful. Well, some of them sounded better than others. There's a place in Honduras, I think it was, right on the beach. I definitely was interested in going to. You know, doesn't the Lord need midwives on the beach? And, you know, that kind of thing. I started praying, even though he wasn't speaking to me at that time, I started praying for closed doors, which is one of my favorite prayers. And the Lord has always been faithful to answer, even when he's not speaking. He definitely closes doors. And when I have too many options on the table, I lay them before him and I say, okay, Lord, whatever is not of you, whatever is a distraction, please close. Close it so tight that I can't possibly budge it open. And that way I know not to run in that direction because I'm a little stupid. I'll just keep running until I run into a brick wall and then I'll turn and then I'll keep running another direction. So I need him to be really clear. And overnight, or what felt like overnight, probably in a couple of weeks, he closed down 9 of those options. And I had the relief of knowing that he was speaking and that he was being faithful to guide me. And it goes back to my key verse, the one that holds me, and I just sit back and I just think, okay, Lord, you tell us. Many of you guys are very familiar with it, but I'll read it to you nevertheless. It's Psalm 3, Verse 5, trust in the Lord with all your heart. Lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge him, and he shall direct your paths. And this, if any verse, happens to be my life verse, and I come back to it, and I'm always comforted. It tells us to trust him, not to lean on our own understanding. And acknowledge him, and he will direct our paths. And it was comforting to me that he answered that way by closing those doors. The only two that he left open happened to be Mexico and Mozambique. Mexico, for you, those that don't know, I'm half Mexican. I have Mexican citizenship, and doesn't it make perfect sense that with, you know, nationality and citizenship, that I would go to that country and start a work, and isn't this great? You know, it makes, you know, logical sense. But rarely does the Lord work in that way. And so I went down to Mexico out of obedience because the door stayed open, and people invited me down to check out a birthing clinic down there that worked with indigenous tribal people up in the mountain. And I fell in love with Mexico. I've been down there a number of times, but this was a new section of Mexico, Oaxaca. I don't know if any of you guys are familiar with Oaxaca, but wow, food, amazing. The language is so fun, and the culture, the city, and I don't know if you guys have been to Oaxaca City, but I'm like, yeah, Lord, I definitely want to stay here. But during my time there, I kept asking, Lord, if you want me to stay here, you have to show me a need, and then you have to give me a vision. And I got down to Mexico, and I just didn't see the need. Yes, there's a need, but it was already being fulfilled by the other midwives working at that clinic. For me to go down there would be redundant. And I kept praying, okay, Lord, show me a need. And I saw it, but again, I wasn't called, I didn't feel I was called to fill that need. And he certainly didn't give me a vision. And so I came home from Mexico and I went, okay, Lord, check. I checked out Mexico. Now what's next? Mozambique. And the work in Mozambique was, I was told about it through some friends also who graduated with me from in the Philippines. And it sounded interesting. They told me about this unused hospital, and wouldn't it be great to go down there and, you know, set up a birthing clinic, yada, yada, yada. And I thought, yeah, that'd be great. And I contacted them, and I said, oh, here you have an unused hospital, and how do you feel about me coming down and setting up a birthing clinic? I really want to train my vision, or I should say the vision, or the guttural call that I feel is needed, is to raise up young women from whatever country that he sends me to be evangelistic or missions-minded midwives to their own people. And I explained to these directors in Mozambique, hey, I'd like to come and check out the place, but I only want to do a birthing clinic, which will eventually lead into a school, a missionary midwifery school for these rural village girls so that they can share Christ and do it in a very loving and tangible way to their own people. And they thought, they sat on my email for probably a day and a half, and then they write back and they say, oh, that sounds really nice, but you know what, we really want to open a hospital. And I go, no, you really want a birthing clinic. And they said, no, well, we really want a hospital, but we've been praying about you and we think you should come out and visit. And I said, okay, so I set it up and I went out to visit. And I spent a month there because for me it was a vision tour. You can't just figure out what's happening in a week and a half. And so I showed up and instantly saw the need. It's hard not to see the need. A heartbreak kind of need. Let me tell you what I saw. I guess I should start there. Mforga Missions, the mission group that have invited me out there, the directors have been there 27 years, and a lot of people go, are you going to Mozambique on your own? Is it like pioneer kind of stuff? And my answer is yes and no. No, I am not going on my own. I'm going to go and join a team of missionaries, many of whom have been there 27, 17 years, different times, and doing different kind of works. But the work that I've been called to do is that I will be beginning. And Mforga, the directors are Roy and Trish, and they oversee mostly the orphans. There are about 100 orphans, it fluctuates from week to week, that they take care of. And they take care of the neediest orphans, so often they are handicapped in some way or mentally challenged. And So you show up on the compound and there's orphans everywhere, little snotty-nosed kids running around barefoot. They're beautiful and loving and sweet. And alongside the orphan work is a school they've raised over the years. They've put together an elementary and a middle school, and they're putting together a high school right now. They do pastor training. Another couple oversees that mostly. And I was told last year they planted 10 churches. There's a church right there on the compound, which mostly is for the orphans and the missionaries. And so, there's a massive amount of work being done. Trade schools. They have an AIDS project where they go out and minister to the communities and praying for them and teaching them about AIDS and how to take their medicines and properly and all kinds of things. There's also an agricultural and husbandry project. So imagine this massive location, this massive compound with all these different works going on. That's what Maforgah is. It represents a stronghold within this dark, burnt, scarred land where his word is going out, and it's beautiful. It's beautiful. But of course, they invited me to come out and check out the hospital. And the hospital is an excellent building. It's in such great condition. They've kept it maintained. It doesn't even need a coat of paint on the wall. But for 7 years, it has laid unused. The woman who was running it before me, she still lives there on the compound, and she's probably 82 or 83. 7 years ago, she just couldn't maintain the work, and so she retired, closed the doors, and it's not being used anymore. But it has all of its equipment. It has, hospital beds and BP cuffs and various things of that nature. And when I got there, I told them straight out, I have no intention of opening a hospital. There's a hospital just 15 minutes down the road. Why would you need this one open? This is ridiculous. And, they can get a cesarean an hour down the road. And I know that's not ideal, but come on, like, why would I need to do something that's already being done by their own people? And I sat there and I prayed about it and prayed about it and I looked around and I interviewed people and I started asking the Lord, I want to open this school, Lord, that's what I want to do, but is it what you want done in this place? And even if, do you want me to be here? I can definitely say I saw the need. For those that don't know, Mozambique is on the southern eastern tip or length of Africa. It was a colony of Portugal. They speak Portuguese as their unifying language, but there are, I think, over 300 different dialects. It's about twice the length and size. I should say it's similar to California, and it has a population of about 25 million. So about twice the size of California, but half its population. And half of the nation, half the population is under the age of 16. And you ask yourself, how does that happen? How does half of the population, how does that occur? And the answer is AIDS. 1 in 3 people in Mozambique has HIV or full-blown AIDS. And all of these children, these 16-year-old and under, all of their parents are dying for ignorance or for lack of medicine or for lack of health care. They're all dying out. And so there's a whole generation, my generation and above. So you have grannies and grandpas, and you have neonates, and very little in between. It's a country, it's an orphaned nation, where heads of households are 12-year-olds. It's hard to describe, but you walk through the streets and you see them. There are kids everywhere. Can't go to school because there's no one to pay the school fees. And so they beg and they steal and they die. There's obviously a need. The infant mortality rate, which is dear to my heart, of course, being a midwife,
77 out of 1,000 babies die. And to compare that with what it's like here in the States, which even in the States isn't the best, but 6 out of 1,000 die here in the States. To have that, you know, 10 times plus, 11 times more, you can see the infant mortality rate is high. It's almost as high as it was in Sudan. And the maternal mortality rate is 490 women will die out of 100,000. And to compare that with the United States, that number is 21. So again, one out of 16 women have the likelihood of dying in childbirth over their lifetime, which is an astronomically large number. So there you see the need. I saw the need. And when I asked him for a vision, I said, Lord, okay, if this is what you're calling me to do, what do you want me to do? And I kept trying to push for the birthing clinic in the school, and he said no. And I said, okay, I'm open, I'm listening, what do you want me to do? And through a number of different encounters, he made it super clear that I was to open the hospital. And I said, no, Lord, I really don't want to open. I don't want to open a hospital. I'm not qualified, I'm a midwife, you know, and he's like, you're opening a hospital. I went, but Lord, don't you know, how could you be, no, Lord, that's just silly. And yet that's what he keeps telling me over and over again. So he doesn't call the qualified, he qualifies the called. So, you know, am I willing to do what he asked me to do? Yes. To obey is better than to sacrifice. And I sit back and I go, Lord, yes, Lord, is the only answer possible here. And so he's asking me to do something that I definitely don't want to do. And I sit back and I think, okay, why, Lord? And let me explain. I want the school. I want the birthing clinic. I want to help these women who are having tremendously difficult births. I hesitate to tell you some of the stories that I was told about these women, from Mozambican women, their experiences of going to the hospital and giving birth. But I'm going to share with you one of them, the one that kept coming back to me. I was told the story more than once by a woman who lived it firsthand, and I have no reason to doubt her. She went into labor, and she got on the bus, and she got to the hospital. It took a long time. The bus doesn't come regularly. She got into the overcrowded hospital in town, which was about an hour's drive away. And she gave birth to a beautiful, healthy child. And the midwife, which is common there, of course delivered the baby, but she wanted a bribe. She wanted to be paid extra for the work that she was doing. And if you go to the hospital, you have to also be carrying extra money to bribe whatever physician or midwife to give you the proper care. And this bribe, what she was demanding, in our equivalency would have been about 50 cents. And the woman said, I'm sorry, I don't have a bribe to give you. And so the midwife took her baby and threatened to push her thumb through the fontanelle of the baby's child and smash her baby's brain unless she paid the bribe. And she said, please don't kill my baby. I promise you I will get you the bribe. And sure enough, with that, somebody found 50 cents and gave it to the midwife, and the baby didn't die. Another birth, that same hospital, didn't have the 50 cents, didn't have a way to get it. And so the midwife refused to give her any help during the birth, and the baby fell on the floor and died. It's hard to believe these kind of stories because you think, how can people behave in such a way? But once you get there and you see, you don't doubt it. there's a need. These midwives don't know Christ. They don't know his love. They live in darkness. What I haven't told you about Mozambique is that it is a nation. It's the darkest nation I've ever been to in terms of witchcraft. I thought Haiti was bad, and that was why I said, I will never go back to Haiti, Lord. That was just so dark and so violent. And yet he decided to take me to Mozambique instead, where I get there, and you think, oh, there's a church, and there's a, you know, people who are praising Jesus and whatnot, but it's all synchronized. It's all, so what I'm looking for? I forget it. But they bring in witchcraft along with Jesus because it's just covering all their bases. So they'll go to church and worship Jesus on Sunday, but then they'll go home and curse their neighbor after lunch. And so it's just a way of life for them. And it's the first time I've ever gone to a country and spent a considerable amount of time there and saw just the heaviness and the darkness of witchcraft. They need to know about Jesus. They need to be taught the simple truths. And that's what I want to do. That's what my goal and my hope is to do. But we can't go back and train those ones that have already been taught. We have to start fresh. And so, again, starting with the youngest generation and moving forward, teaching them how to value life and how to show the love of Christ to their neighbors. But the government of Mozambique won't just let me open a school. I had to, you know, talk to a few different people and soon realize that that's not how I can do it. I can't just go and show up and open a Christian midwifery school. And so I said, okay, so what do I have to do first in order to do that? Well, I have to open a birthing clinic, but they won't just let me go in there and open a birthing clinic. And I, okay, so what do I have to do in order to get permission to open a birthing clinic? I have to give them what they want. And they want this hospital reopened. And so I've, through much prayer and through much thought and planning, and even discussing with the government officials there in Mozambique, we agreed that it will be a semi-private hospital. We'll reopen it, and that I will be administrative, and I will pay the salaries of the staff, but they will fund all of the medicines and supplies. And that we'll be focusing on taking care of children under 5, which is the age group that is most at risk. Of course, you know, being Africa, everyone and their uncle's going to show up, so I don't know how long making it a baby clinic will actually be effective. But at the same time, it's the Lord's work. If he's going to do it, he can do it whatever he feels like. So the first step for this particular vision is to reopen the hospital, give the government what they want, and then in exchange, get what we want, what we pray for, that the people would come to know Christ. And so it will be a medical clinic that focuses on a Christian ethic, where it's mandatory for each patient that they'll be prayed for, that they'll hear the gospel, and that they will, God willing, not be bribed or threatened for a bribe, I should say, in order to give birth. From there, years down the road, once that's established, then we'll focus on opening the birthing clinic part of things. And once the birthing clinic is opened, then there will be a place for me to train the village girls. And we'll bring them out of the village, we'll tell them about Jesus if they don't already know him, and train them up with a Christian ethic. And God willing, they will get saved and come to know Christ and go home and share it with all of their family members. Our goal and the vision is to have each village build their own clinic in preparation. So we'll take the girls out, the village will have to build the clinic, and then we'll return to them their own villager who speaks their language, who understands their culture, who's part of their clan, to take care of their people. And ultimately, the goal is to share Christ with every village. And As you can well guess, it's a long-term vision. This is not something that happens overnight. And for me, this is a life work. So I'm grateful for that. I'm grateful that the Lord has decided to plant me somewhere. I was a little bit tired of bouncing from one country to the next and trying to learn a new culture and a new language each time. What's going to happen next, you ask? Well, now it's the time of fundraising and getting prayer support and getting people who are willing to stand with me in this particular call. The goal is to leave by April and to spend the first year of my time there learning the languages. I'll have to learn two languages. The first is Chichetwe, which is a local dialect, and very similar to Shona. And the second, of course, will be Portuguese. Once the languages are in place, then, of course, more ministry can happen. I told the Lord I do not want to deliver any more babies through a translator. That was hard enough in Sudan. So he's been grateful to, gracious enough, I should say, to allow me that time. And my heart is to go in low and to go in slow, so that I will go and live in the villages, learn the culture, learn the superstitions, understand the culture well enough so that I can share Christ through friendship evangelism and ultimately build bridges with the community and see what the Lord wants to do in all of us. This is the vision he's given me, and I ask just that you would be prayerful for me and for this work, and that if the Lord is leading you in any way to be a part of it, that you wouldn't hesitate. Of course, I am going for the long term. I don't imagine the work will be completed for at least another 15 or 20 years. He can do it much faster, of course, if he tarries. But that is what he's called me to do next. It's a big chunk. This is what we're called as a body to do next. And I'm excited. I'm excited to see who he calls to come on the short-term teams to come to Mozambique and be a part of this work. I'm excited to see who he calls to be intercessors and prayer warriors on my behalf. When you're dealing with this kind of witchcraft, I really need your prayers. I just do. There you have it. I promised Rick I wouldn't go over 10:30. It's 10:25. So I have 5 extra minutes. But I pray that you will indulge me 5 more minutes. I'm going to show you a video. You're going to see pictures of what it looks like there. And you're going to see ideas of everything that's going on. And then we'll go from there.
In
Thanks, guys. So now you know what it looks like. Let me tell you how you can be involved. I need people who are willing to stand with me financially on a monthly basis. I need people who are willing to do one-time gifts. I need people who are intercessors and willing to stand with me in prayer. And those that might be interested in giving something more tangible, like helping me get certain medical equipment that I need or specialty stuff for the particular work. If you're feeling led in any way to be a part of that, just let me know. Come talk to me in person. Or take one of my prayer cards on the back table. You'll recognize me. It's me holding, you know, a little baby and, you know, whatnot. It's hard to miss. And send me an email or let me know that you're part of the prayer team. If you'd like to be involved in that particular prayer team, please sign up on the list also. There's a newsletter list. I send out information. Each month I talk about the specific needs, the specific prayers, and it's a good way for you to stay in contact and plugged in with that. And then for those who like to read blogs, I tend to keep my blog updated with the latest of what's happening, so you can always figure out what's happening. So with that, I'm going to hand it back over to Rick and wish you guys a wonderful morning. Thank you so much for letting me share with you today.
We're going to need volunteers to clean the chairs and stuff. This is amazing in ministry. I think as most of you know, when Marie and I were in Mozambique South with Luke doing